Good morning. Thank you all for being here this morning to share in an exploration of the Dharma, and especially to those who have given up their weekend to return to the foundation stone of our practice, Zazen. Form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. Form is no other than emptiness, emptiness no other than form. We just finished chanting those words at our chanting service. And we chant them, of course, at every full chanting service. But what is it really about? How many have really looked at that phrase and wondered or asked about it? Or do most of us take it on faith? It must be some kind of Zen thing. Maybe I'll find out later. There are many, many koans that address this from different directions, but none more directly than case number 43. In the Wu Men Quan. That's the Mumon Khan. Parenthetically, I might say that in these talks, we're all trying to make the transition from the Japanese names of the Tang Dynasty masters to the Chinese names, because they were, after all, Chinese. And it's going to sound a little bit stilted and a little bit awkward from time to time, and we will try to include the Japanese, the more familiar Japanese names as we go along, but bear with us during this period. Case number 43 in the Wu Men Quan, Shoshan's short bamboo staff. The case reads, the priest Shoshan held up his short bamboo staff before his assembly and said, you monks, if you call this a staff, you're entangled. If you don't call this a staff, you ignore the fact. Tell me, what will you call it? Wu Men's comment, call it a short staff and you're entangled. Don't call it a short staff and you ignore the fact. You cannot use words. You cannot use words. Speak quickly. Speak quickly. And Wu Men's verse. Holding up a short staff, faithfully giving and taking life, entangling and ignoring interweave. Buddhas and ancestors beg for their lives. Shoshan, his Japanese name is Shuzan, was a Dharma descendant of Linchi, that's Rinzai, lived in the 10th century of the Common Era. That's about the beginning of the Song Dynasty. He died in the year 993 at the age of 68. He was a student and Dharma successor of Feng Shui, that's Fuketsu, and he is credited with reviving the vigor of Lin Qi's Zen, which had begun to flag at that time. The short bamboo staff in question here is about 3 feet long, somewhere between the long shakujo that is carried by the tanto at Shosan and the kotsu, the short curved stick the teacher carries. In Chinese, it is called chu pi, or shippe in Japanese, which literally means broken bow, and it is somewhat curved like a bow. All these sticks and staffs that are associated with Zen teachers are sometimes misunderstood. They are looked upon as some kind of symbol of authority, rather like a staff of office, a royal scepter, or even a nightstick. If you were to ask Zhao Zhou, that's Joshu, why he carried a staff, he would tell you that it is useful for chasing off the dogs. This is ancestral Zen, the Zen of the ancestors. So our teachers carry that same Zen with as best they can. When the lay order was discussing the matter of full ordination, that is, when a member of the lay order takes the black robe, Dennis Tessar mentioned that while the initial ordination in which the raksu is received represents a commitment by the individual to a life of practice, the black robe of full ordination is worn for all sentient beings. I imagine that the staff, long or short, carried by the teacher, is a useful reminder of his or her obligations and responsibilities to all beings. Shoshan held up his staff and said, "If you call this a staff, you're entangled. If you don't call this a staff, you ignore the fact. Tell me, what do you call it?" Here we are faced with the conundrum. As with any koan, it cannot be entered with the intellect, words, or concepts. This staff cannot be seized with the discursive, analytical mind. If you say it is form, 30 blows. If you say it is emptiness, 30 blows. If you try to cover your butt and say it is both form and emptiness, 60 blows. And if you say it is neither form nor emptiness, 60 blows. You have to take a stand. Is it form? Is it emptiness? Nor can you say sometimes it's one and sometimes the other. That doesn't work either. Conceptually, it is impossible to reconcile two opposites. But in the reality, opposites are not opposed. They are the same. They've always been the same. The paradox is not in the object, but in our own habitual way of seeing and thinking. For me, a most interesting example of this falls out of modern high-energy physics, in which subatomic particles show characteristics of particles, or they show the characteristic of waves, depending on how you measure them, what equipment you use, and so forth. Now, certain New Age writers, including some with physics degrees who ought to know better, try to hijack the science and make a huge deal out of this. It's a particle. It's a wave. It all depends on what we want it to be. And they get into this stuff about how the human mind controls everything. Well, the mind they are talking about is the small, illusory, ego mind that doesn't control anything, but would like to, and in many cases thinks it does. Suppose I have two pieces of equipment, a camera and a tape recorder. If I take a photograph of a car, it is recorded as a visual object. If I take a recording from the tape machine, it comes across as an auditory object. Does that mean that the automobile has magically changed its nature depending on whether I use the camera or the tape recorder? Of course not. The object didn't change. The way I observed it or perceived it did. The same is true of subatomic particles. If you use an accelerator and impact a target with them, they appear to be solid particles. If you shoot them through a pair of slits from the accelerator, they interact as waves. But that doesn't mean that the nature of the objects has suddenly changed. The uncertainty principle is not about uncertainty in any object. It is about the uncertainties of our various ways of seeing. The particles are what they are. They don't know they are supposed to be one way or another. Some physicists have coined the term wavicle to get around this seeming contradiction between waves and particles. But this doesn't answer Shoshan's challenge. This simply adds another concept. You cannot reconcile form and emptiness by saying fortiness. That will get you 60 blows or maybe more. Ultimate reality is not some compromise or an average of form and emptiness. The truth is form, through and through. The truth is emptiness, through and through. The middle way is a completely new direction, or better yet, a no direction. It's not that complicated. If we sit in Zazen long enough, we begin to experience the emptiness of everything. As we go about our daily lives, we see the form. But it doesn't mean that Buddha nature changes. The way we see it changes. Form is Buddha nature. Emptiness is Buddha nature. The form aspect is important. It is in form that compassion arises. In form, we take care of things. We drink from a cup. We wash it and put it away. We take care of the cup. The emptiness aspect is important. It is in emptiness where we are not attached. If someone needs a cup, we give it to them. If the cup breaks, we don't freak out. We repair it if we can, or find another cup. This doesn't make the cup any less real. There's nothing magic about it. The cup doesn't know it is a cup in the illusory sense of human consciousness, but it possesses a knowledge far deeper, a knowing that goes beyond knowing and not knowing. The cup is infinite knowing, prajna, even as Shoshan's staff and we ourselves. As the philosopher and Zen teacher David Loy puts it, a cup is what space is doing in that place at that moment. One could say that the cup is what Buddha nature is doing, what we are doing in that place at that moment. We just take care. We take care of children, family, friends, animals, plants, the earth, and the air. We take care of plates and cups and cars and furniture and Shoshan's staff. We take care of our practice. We take care of ourselves as best we can. But we are not attached. For all these forms are transient. Cars and cups wear out and break. Children grow up and get old, and eventually we all die. It is the way of things. It is the way, the Tao. In his instructions to the Tenzo, Master Dogen describes taking care of the form of things in minute detail. But he also brings up the non-attachment of emptiness. He writes, "When you prepare food, do not see with ordinary eyes and do not think with ordinary discriminating mind. Take up a blade of grass and construct a treasure king's land. Enter into a particle of dust and turn the great Dharma wheel. Do not arouse disdainful mind when you prepare a broth of wild grasses. Do not arouse joyful mind when you prepare a fine cream soup. Where there is no discrimination, how can there be distaste? Thus, do not be careless, even when you work with poor materials, and sustain your efforts even when you have excellent materials. Never change your attitude according to the materials. If you do, it is like varying your truth when speaking with different people. Then you are not a practitioner of the way. If one carefully examines the precepts, they are also the expression of this duality that is not a duality. They are about taking care, form, and at the same time they are about non-attachment, emptiness. Do not kill. That is taking care. Do not attach to the idea of killing. That is letting go. Do not steal, but do not attach to notions of gain and loss. If you call this a staff, you're entangled. If you don't call this a staff, you ignore the fact. Tell me, what do you call it? So right now in our lives and in our practice, we take the middle way, this no direction. We take hold of this staff directly. How? One way to do this is given to us by Robert Aitken Roshi. In his commentary on this case, he includes a sequel to the story. The monk Kuei Sheng snatched the short staff from Shoshan, dashed it to the floor, and cried out, "What is this?" Shoshan shouted, "Blind!" With this, Kuei Sheng was enlightened. Aitken Roshi comments, "Blind, like Taishan exposed to total darkness by Lungtan, Kuei Sheng went completely blind." Kuei Sheng throws the staff down and cries out, "What is this?" A direct and powerful response to Shoshan's challenge. Yes, Kuei Sheng was blind to all aspects and notions, not caught up, not entangled in form, not ignoring reality. At that moment, he was completely free. And what is most interesting is that he doesn't even know it until Shoshan shouts, "Blind!" Kuei Sheng was indeed blind. He was not thinking, not calculating. In that moment, he had no notion of what he was doing or why. He hadn't rehearsed anything in his mind. He had no plan. He just did it. He came forth in this moment, as this moment. It was an act of pure not knowing and an act of courage. Those who are working on koans will find this familiar. You go into Doksan, especially during the latter part of Sesshin, and Roshi puts a question, and you just respond. You had no idea what you were going to say or do. It just happens. And then later, maybe months later, it comes to you. Oh my gosh, that's what that was about. It takes some guts to be that open, that vulnerable. But there is a part of us that knows better, knows deeper than the conscious, scheming, rehearsing ego mind. But there's still a trap here. That realization, the wonderful coming forth, can very quickly become ossified as a concept. Move on. Don't get stuck, even in what is this. There is a danger of using "what is this" or "I don't know" as a kind of crutch, a one-size-fits-all response. In working with koans, we have to look at each case coming from emptiness, but at the same time coming forth appropriately to the individual circumstances. And that is, after all, how we practice our lives, to see clearly and come forth in the moment, as that moment. Some years ago, a group of psychologists wanted to incorporate some aspects of Buddhism into their work. However, they realized that there are many different schools of Buddhism which are seemingly contradictory. So, in an attempt to arrive at some sort of synthesis, they arranged a meeting between Buddhist teachers from two radically different traditions, Tibetan and Zen. The meeting was billed as a Dharma combat, and quite a number of people came to see what would happen. The first to arrive was a Tibetan Lama, a man in his 70s, along with his interpreter and attendants. And of course, they were all wearing the saffron and maroon robes of their order. Then the Zen teacher, who was quite a bit younger, arrived with his attendants, dressed in austere gray and black. It was agreed that the younger of the two would ask the first question. So the Zen teacher reached into his robe, pulled out an orange, thrust it into the Lama's face and shouted, "What is this?" The Lama didn't respond immediately. So the Zen teacher again shouted, "What is this?" Very slowly, the Lama leaned over to his interpreter, and after a whispered conversation, the interpreter said, "Rinpoche says, 'What's the matter with this man? Don't they have oranges where he comes from?'" The meeting was ended at that point. Compare and contrast. Kuei Sheng comes forth in the moment as that moment. The Zen teacher tries to pull a premeditated stunt and gets his comeuppance. But be careful still. Form and emptiness are not about existence or non-existence. Now, at this point, I'm going to attempt to paraphrase our 14th Indian ancestor, Nagarjuna, a philosopher whose intellect I suspect rivals that of Dogen. He is sometimes called the second founder of Buddhism, as his dialectical approach established much of the intellectual foundation of the Mahayana schools. If this makes sense, all credit to Nagarjuna. If it doesn't, please blame me. The argument goes like this. If something were to have a permanent, independent existence with form as its essential nature, that is, if something truly was, it could not change one iota, ever. But think about that. Is there anything whose form is not constantly changing? Is there anything that truly does not move or change? If one considers a chair, if that chair form were its true nature, it would be unchanging and eternal just as it is. Imagine. At the end of the kalpa, the universe collapses in flames into a singularity prior to the next big bang, and there's that chair, still floating out there in the ether somewhere. That would be pretty amazing. Not only that, it would be without a cause, have no connection or effect on anything. I wonder if we could even perceive such a thing. On the other hand, if that chair were truly non-existent, we, of course, would be totally unaware of it and could never become aware of it. As one of Nagarjuna's successors put it, if entities were altogether non-existent, they would be unapprehended, like the horn of a rabbit. Don't get hung up on existence and non-existence. They are not the equivalent terms of form and emptiness. The whole business of existence or non-existence is a false question. Form and emptiness, on the other hand, are one reality. There is no emptiness without form. There is no form without emptiness. They create each other. do not try to transcend or avoid duality. Immerse yourself in it. Become the duality. We are already transcendent. We are beyond transcendent. We don't have to work at it. The staff is like that. It does not know that it is a staff or that it is not a staff or that it is Buddha nature. The true reality of things is ultimately beyond all words, thoughts, concepts, notions, or speculations. But it is very easy to fall into a trap here as well. We start thinking that there is some evil empire called ignorance or duality, and some new Eden called enlightenment, oneness. But these are just more words and concepts. If we get hung up on trying to escape the one and attain the other, we are still caught up in dualistic thinking. Bernie Glassman writes, "A big mistake commonly made in studying Zen is to think there is something inherently wrong with the world of duality, and that it's to be transcended or somehow discarded once and for all. The point is not to negate or transcend duality, but to totally immerse oneself in it. Totally becoming duality means totally becoming not only the relative, but the absolute as well. Because distinction between the two is nothing but a notion." Again, how do we become this reality? Become the relative and the absolute. Take care and let go. Take care of what is in front of you right here, right now. And as things change, you will change with them. Pay attention and let go. That is, after all, our practice. We pay the closest possible attention to mu, or the breath. And at the same time, we are letting go of all notions about mu or the breath. In fact, paying attention and letting go are one and the same. If we are caught up in notions, we aren't paying attention. If we truly pay attention, there are no notions, thoughts, or concepts. Wu Min's comment. "Call it a short staff and you're entangled. Don't call it a short staff and you ignore the fact. You cannot use words. You cannot use words. Speak quickly. Speak quickly." No, we cannot use words, yet we must speak. How do we speak without using words? Speak. Speak. How does a great swordsman use a sword? How does an artist use a brush? How does a poet use words? Shoshan's teacher, Feng Shui, was asked a similar question by a monk in Case 24 in the Wumen Quan. A monk asked the priest, "Feng Shui, speech and silence are concerned with equality and differentiation." Again, emptiness and form. "How can I transcend equality and differentiation?" Feng Shui said, "I always think of Jiangnan in March. Partridges chirp among the many scented flowers." This verse of Feng Shui is not original with him. It was written by someone else. It doesn't matter. When we speak truly, we are the words, and the words are us, even as our skin and blood and bone. From the beginning, there is no separation. Katsuki Cicada, in his comment on this case, remarks, "As for what you will call it, a child will be able to name it properly without much trouble." Yes, a child just comes forth. The words come forth without effort, without thought. A child who cried out that the emperor has no clothes. I don't mean necessarily childlike, or rather not childish. I don't mean childish. I mean childlike. One who is childlike has attained the hard-won innocence of the truly mature practitioner, like the Tibetan Lama. Wu Men's verse. Holding up a short staff, faithfully giving and taking life, entangling and ignoring interweave, Buddhas and ancestors beg for their lives. Of course, this is the job of our teachers, to hold up a staff, or an orange if appropriate, and cry out, "What is this?" To force us to the edge of the abyss where we are left with no choice but to leap. We lose our lives to gain life. And when we emerge, entangling, ignoring, form, emptiness, words, silence, such distinctions become less and less as they interweave, and thus they become irrelevant. Speak plainly. Speak honestly. Speak from the heart, and Buddhas and ancestors and gods must all beg for their lives. What is Shoshan asking us to do? Go beyond. Take a leap. It's not so far. Go beyond words and silence, beyond concepts about staff or not staff. What will you call Shoshan staff? And how will you make use of it? Dogen tells us, take up a blade of grass and construct a treasure king's land. William Blake wrote, see the universe in a grain of sand. In case number 48 in the Wu Men Quan, a monk asked the priest Kan Feng, Bhagavat's in the 10 directions. That refers to the 10,000 things. One straight road to nirvana. That refers to the absolute. I wonder where that road is. Kan Feng lifted up his staff and drew a line in the air and said, here it is. Later, a monk asked Yun Men about this. Yun Men held up his fan and said, this fan jumps to the heaven of the 33 and strikes the nose of the deity. Give a carp of the eastern sea one blow and the rain comes down in torrents. Yun Men has great fun with that fan. We too can enjoy Yun Men's fan and Shoshan's staff. It is with us, right here, in our sitting, our walking, our eating, and resting. Don't be afraid to pick it up. Grasp it directly with all your mind. Grasp it and let go of it with every move, with every breath. Together, with all beings, we attain Buddhahood.